case of 98383, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Bradley Reisenfeld. Richard.
I could begin by saying, the legislature didn't meet you before, because you're following back-to-back, there's not a lot more you can say.
Is there a difference?
There is a difference, yes, sir. The difference in this case...
Let me finish the question. Do you think that the conduct of Bradley warrants a different sanction than the conduct of his father?
Yes, sir.
Is that because it was Bradley's conduct that caused the person to go to the Bar Association and complain?
In part, yes, sir. And
it was his father who, upon finding, although I guess he did this a couple of times, but upon finding that there may have been patterns of this, he caused the search to be made of the files, the records, and then was cooperating with the bar. Is that the reason?
That's basically it, Your Honor. We find that Mr. Bradley Reisenfeld did this much more frequently. And the difference with him in his case was he also notarized the documents that had been prepared in the same manner. In Sylvan Reisenfeld's case, those were generally notarized by the secretary.
I misunderstood it. I thought I asked that question in that case, and I thought you said that Sylvan notarized the documents that had been... The secretary had seen the client sign, but that the lawyer did the notary, did the juror.
In five of the affidavits, if that's what we'll call them, they were notarized by Bradley Reisenfeld. I have no record of Sylvan ever notarizing the document, and if I misspoke or led you to that conclusion, I apologize, it was not my intent. The secretary named Oakler notarized exhibits 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in the capacity that we've already discussed. In this case, and this is the one in which we have the emergency, in which two documents were signed on the 20th of October and were not filed until 6 days later. October the 20th was a Friday. But there was also a document apparently signed on the 20th, dated the 26th. I really don't have much more to say on that. I'm happy to speak to the notary statute. I'm happy to speak to the other issues. I don't need to debate you, sir, on Atticus and Scout. What I have said here, I believe, in this particular circumstance, this is more egregious. It is more egregious because it was done with more frequency, and it was the attorney notarizing that which his client did not, under the statute, come before the minister.
You've indicated that you think the penalty should be different. This should be more severe than the father's penalty. But your brief indicates... The last sentence in both of them is the same, not less than 6 months.
Not less than 6 months, yes, sir.
You asked for the same penalty in both.
That's what the brief says, yes, sir.
But now that's not what you feel today?
No, sir. I think in light of the court's questioning, in light of what we've developed here this morning, I think that the sanction for Bradley should be greater. I think that there was a greater fault. You would ask about the notary statute. There's another portion of that is not cited, and it's very simple. It says the words acknowledged before me have meaning. They have statutory meaning, and that is the person acknowledging appears before the person taking the acknowledgement. This is 147.54.1. He acknowledged he executed the instrument. In the case of a natural person, he executed the instrument for the purposes stated. There's a statute that governs the conduct of notaries. There's a test that the notaries take. The bar is exempted. Does a notary who takes the test and falsely jurors loses his or her right to be a notary for 3 years, but the attorney is told, don't do it again? This is the place the definition was come.
Did the Bar Association go after the secretary who notarized?
No, sir, the Bar Association did not.
Oh.
It has been the custom, as I understand it, and we have committees throughout the state, that if a prosecuting witness brings to the attention of the bar misconduct of the internment blemish, what to do. And I believe that this court said long time ago, and I forget the case, that the greater evil is the act of the attorney.
Yeah, well, I understand all that, but specifically, the statute, if you're concerned about the... Right, if you're concerned about the statute, then the statute would specifically place responsibility on her.
That is correct.
Okay, and then, as I recall it, .99, you could put her in jail for this.
.99 is the penalty section, and there is, if you look at the 53 Amendment under the Uniform Acknowledgement Act, it's imprisonment plus a dollar fine.
Yeah, not more than $100 or imprisonment, not more than 30 days or both.
That is correct. We did not go after the notary Oakler. We went after the notary Bradley Westmore.
So the Bar Association makes exceptions also.
In following this court's guidelines, yes, sir.
Can we set down a guideline that you don't go after a
no,
defaulting
no,
notary?
You have to decide the greater evil.
Who said that?
If you're going to police the attorney profession and a prosecuting witness comes to you, what positions do you take? Do you take what comes to the Bar Association from a prosecuting witness until filed here is confidential? The Board of Governors, the Board of Commissioners on grievances in their interpretation of In re Himmel, which is the Chicago case, the Turnigan case, which was part of Operation Gray Ward.
Oh, yeah.
And you will recall in the Himmel case, every Bar Association in the country filed amicus briefs on behalf of Himmel because they thought it was too harsh. The Board of Commissioners modified privilege and confidentiality as to what steps you have to take. And the clear message that we received was that this court and the board were more concerned with the conduct of attorneys. And that is the explanation for this.
Did Mrs. Erdman, I thought I read it, but I can't find it. Did Mrs. Erdman testify or state that the words of the affidavit that she had signed, the piece of paper she had signed was filled in, were not accurate?
Yes, sir, she did. She testified that the affidavit indicated that she was in severe fear of bodily harm. The testimony was that that was not true in the affidavit. She was never in fear of her husband. I didn't touch that point because the Board of Commissioners, in weighing the evidence, commented on that. And if they are the finders of fact, then I'm locked into that. But she did testify at the hearing that there was a difference between her affidavit and the truth.
And she noticed that, I guess, when it was sent to her.
I believe she said, I think it's at page 106 of the transcript. I'm not positive, but I believe she said that she first saw that at the hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Mr. Brother.
Gates, Richards.
May it please the court. And I guess my vote for this case would be the truth is not a purpose of defense. It is important to understand your oath in the case. When she came to Mr. Bradley and Weissenfeld, she fed a group of people for abused women. She had on her own lost the domestic relations court and got an affidavit because of the violence that her husband had perpetrated in the household. He was a very controlling man. She was a dominating partner. She came to Mr. Weissenfeld in the next appearance. That affidavit was going to expire. So to extend the TRO, she reiterated those complaints. He dictated those in front of her, but the affidavit was signed outside her presence. When they appeared in front of the referee, Ms. Erdman was represented by Mr. Weissenfeld. Her husband was represented. There was a referee there. These matters were gone over. Ms. Erdman never raised a concern. Police officers from her neighborhood were brought in and said, yes, this household had been an abusive household. Later, the parties reconciled. Husband looked at the woman and his wife, why did you say that about me? I didn't do it, the lawyer did. The husband then was the one initiating these matters. Now, I say that, again, I know the fact off of the fall below the standard, which the court would require on taking the Jure Act, that all of the people who, I think objectively, and whose mission it was to make sure the spouses are not abused, women helping women, her counselor, police officers, and the court, they all concluded, everyone, as if the vandals, no, that was the truth. But then the matter again is focused on Mr. Lazenby. It is one of those, again, where I say you, as the attorney, you must adhere strictly to the statute. It doesn't make any difference if you save your client from being beaten to death, if you save her from a safe environment, that doesn't make any difference. If you preserve the assets from being stolen in a perverse part kind of way, and those things are done, in this case, he would have been fine. His problem was when the people from the shelter came to him saying, "Can you help this woman?" And he did. And when these matters were all determined to be true by everyone, and it was an emergency, he still executed the Jure Act improperly. Given that, accepting that, I do think we then again come to sanction and what sanction is appropriate. I will yell and scream to those who listen to me, I get about the sanction of a public reprimand, but it would be appropriate in certain cases. And I do think that anecdotes in this case would be the lawyer executes it improperly, gives no false information to the court, no complaints of false information from opposing counsel. Both judges of the courts in which they practice indicate saying the net result is that this woman was made safe until this matter was litigated to the court. In those circumstances, yes, I do believe that a public reprimand is appropriate.
But she could have been made safe by following the law. You're not suggesting that was the only way she could be made safe, are you?
No, there are other ways. And again, this woman,
she could have been asked to wait while the affidavit was typed up and then done it the way most people do it.
Those are the facts contained in the transcript, but during this whole period of time, she was in a hurry. She couldn't. Her therapist was one of those people who she had gone to initially, who had brought her to Mr. Weisenfeld and had talked about it. Yes, there may have been a way, and he held her there, made her stay, or not done. It was the Jure Act, Your Honor, was executed improperly.
Were all of the persons that Bradley facilitated in this way, were they all from the shelter? Or there was only Miss Irving was. The others were.
Yes, this was the only case like that. The other cases were dealing with 75 in orders where the assets were preserved for the client. She dictated in front of his client. Yeah. They signed it subsequently. Language is typed onto the papers, all of which, in every forum, every party, everyone, has all said it's true. There is no allegation anywhere the information is not true. I would only, again, insofar as sanction is concerned, and on a message, I do think messages are important, and there are two messages, I think. Number one, your conduct, the court is going to give the appropriate sanction to message after that. But also your conduct in dealing with this, and how you affect the public, how you present this matter to us, and how you deal with it. I think it's also a message, but I wish that every client, every person I had, before you will matter such as this, would like Mr. Weisenfeld and judge their honesty and what they actually did. I can understand the mistakes of doing it properly, but that cruelty, the need to protect the public, from lawyers who go over the line, something appear clearly, told us in numerous opinions. I do not think that Mr. Bradley rises the bell to represent a danger to the public. He's not an untruthful person. None of the lawyers nor either of the judges who watch their work on a continual basis thought so. I do think that in this case, public reprimand is also screened. The other thing I would direct the court's attention to is in the language that the panel and the commission used. I mean, we just had to say yes. I mean, they understood the fact, behavior, motivation, I think, of my client, and the obligation of the relator to bring this to the court's attention, and it just does not seem to me how an actual suspension, in circumstances such as these, could possibly help anyone, could possibly protect others. You are encouraged lawyers to care for her, stand up, acknowledge your care for her, and try to be forthright to put her later. Is there a question?
Thank you, Mr. Berlew.
Thank you.
Mr. Richards, you've saved 7 minutes of your time.
Thank you, sir. I believe the head note should capitalize the language in Gonzo and the Mississippi Bar Association, which indicates that the issue is not capitalized. For us, whether or not the content of this NTRO motion to have a restraining order. For truth, the issue is Gonzo's lack of candor with the court. Once the signature was identified, the fact that the method in which the signature was affixed to the document would not have changed the truth of its allegation is beside the point. In response to Mr. Chief Justice Warner's questions concerning the testimony given by Ms. Young Luna at page 52, she was asked if your husband ever physically attacked you or abused you, and she said no. At page 64, will you give an opportunity to review what ended up on these blank sheets of paper that you signed at any time? No. I was given 4 sheets of blank paper. I was told to sign. And I began capitalizing. At page 65, the affidavit states that the defendant physically harmed and threatened me, and unless restrained, I fear that he will continue to harass me and I will physically and mentally harmed by him. Question, is that true? Answer, no.
Did her husband attend this deposition by any chance?
This is a trial hearing and her husband did attend, and I will quote part of his record in just a second, sir. At page 69 of the transcript, this question then comes up. If you look at line 4, paragraph 4, is there a line which talks about this? Does it say that that's a problem? No, I've never been afraid of my husband ever hitting me or beating me, and that is at page 69.
Why
should
you even be
in
shelter for women?
Well, the lady from the shelter testified at page 84. Did Mrs. Erdman ever tell you then or at any time that her husband was physically abusing her? Answer, no. That is at page 84 of the transcript. At page
84.
I do not. And the record. Yes, ma'am. In response to Chief Justice Warner's earlier question in my earlier presentation, I feel that the Board of Commissioners made a finding of fact because they weighed the testimony and they have the right to do that. I do not know why they did that. I was not involved in any of the proceedings until this part of it. I was not involved in the trial. I agree it's inconsistent, but if I am locked into the record references, then page 80 is significant to me. And page 106 of the transcript, they talk about the filing of the emergency affidavits. And the question is, would it surprise you to know the affidavit or the court affidavit was not filed with the court until 6 days after the date it was there? Who would it bear? If that's what the stamp says, that's the date it was filed. The emergency took 6 days. This conduct has got to be addressed. It should be addressed now, or we can come back when some citizen has really suffered because of an improper notary and the document being stricken. Is a year sanction too much? It's your decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for our opinion.